In this lecture, I would like to say just a few words about St. John Cassian, about his importance in the history of the monastic tradition, his importance as a source on which particularly Western monasticism draws, and something about the available sources of his writings that are available to us today. The basic facts of his life are listed on the webpage before you, and perhaps one of the most important things to note is that Cassian really is a bridge between the Eastern, that is the Greek-speaking monastic tradition on the one hand, and the Christian West on the other. He writes his great works, the works for which he's particularly remembered, the Institutes and the Conferences, as an elderly abba in communities associated with communities that he had founded in the area of Marseille near the islands of the Loran. And we have to bear in mind that when he's writing these things in the 420s, it is several decades after he has left Egypt. And so he is recalling, he is remembering, and in these great works, he is not so much recalling verbatim, exactly what was said precisely word by word by each of the fathers to whom he attributes the sayings, but he is putting together under the title and under the name, some of the names of the great fathers whom he knew, the themes of monastic life for the communities for which he is himself writing. He's writing for communities of men and women in Gaul, in what is now France, in the early 5th century, and he is attempting to condense for them and to make livable for them a tradition that had existed decades before in Egypt and is now regarded as a sort of a magical time of high attainment, almost never to be seen again. He's writing about a golden age of monasticism, which he himself did experience, and this is his recollection, his distilling out of its wisdom, and his presentation of that wisdom for existing monastic communities. So when we read his Institutes and Conferences, we should not be looking for an exact historical narrative, although it's very clear, especially from the work done more recently by Columba Stewart, that the journeys he describes and the places that he visited were almost certainly historical and accurate. Nevertheless, we have to expect that he is adapting this material for his new audience and recalling it in a way that allows it to be alive for those people rather than attempting to have been a sort of a monastic stenographer, a kind of an early recording machine. So when we look to his Institutes and Conferences, we're looking for carefully crafted material which is intended for a monastic community many decades later. The big event that lies between him and his communities in France and the experience of Egypt in the 380s and 390s is the Origenist controversy, the tragedy which split the monastic world, especially in Egypt, and caused the expulsion of some of the brightest and the best minds in Egypt, who were very great devotees of the writings of Origen and who discovered themselves regarded as heretics by those around them because Origen's conclusions were being called into question. And so there really was an expulsion, a kind of an exile, and a wandering of monks in the year 399 and the years that follow that, of which Cassian was a part, although he doesn't himself say very much about that. So it's important to bear in mind that he has seen tumult. He has seen a monastic world in a very beautiful state suddenly collapse and, as it were, turn in on itself and effectively go to war with itself. He has himself been in a kind of exile and is finally settled, and in the fruit of old age, he is now able to record and to write down these recollections for people. That's the background, that's the context for his two great works. The important characteristic regarding his early life is that he was probably born in what is now Romania, which is to say a Latin and Greek-speaking province. So he was probably bilingual from birth and had the capacity to work easily in each language, or at least to understand enough Greek to put it into very reasonable Latin. And that effectively is what he did in later life. He and his good friend Germanus went to Bethlehem and joined a monastery, where they one day were astonished to discover that the extremely devout and zealous old man who had been sharing their cell with them for some time turned out to have been a runaway abbot from Egypt who had run away from his responsibilities because he didn't want the lofty dignity of being an abbot and was willing to subject himself to what amounts to the indignity of becoming a beginner in another monastery. He was recognized and taken back to his community, and Cassian and Germanus, fascinated by what they had seen of this man's humility, asked permission of their superiors to visit Egypt and discover what the monastic traditions were there. They were given permission. They traveled to Egypt. They traveled widely in the communities primarily of northern Egypt, certainly spending a significant amount of time in the communities of Nitria and Sketus, and especially in the Kelia, all of which places were full at that time of very important abbas whose sayings are recorded in the Apothegmata. But the most important from the standpoint of the structure and the basic theology and the categories of thought that we find in Cassian is Evagrius Ponticus. Cassian was unquestionably a hearer, if not a formal disciple, of Evagrius. The structure of the Institutes is modeled very closely on the structure of Evagrius's Practikos, and there are a great many parallels that have been recognized constantly that suggest very strongly that Cassian is using Evagrius, or that he is borrowing from what he knew of Evagrius' teaching in his own later writings, in his own later works. Chief among these borrowings being the idea of the eight deadly thoughts, so the eight categories of temptation to which a person is subject. So he and Germanus traveled widely in Egypt. They were concerned about a promise they had made to return after a number of years, and they discovered that things were so wonderful in Egypt that they didn't want to return. They wondered what that meant in terms of their promise. Did this mean they were violating their vow? They eventually did go back to Palestine and received permission from their superiors to remain in Egypt, but it was a source of concern, and that comes up in several places in Cassian's writings. Around the year 399, the Anthropomorphite controversy and the first Origenist controversy broke out. The controversy over whether or not God could be imaged, whether it was appropriate to have any mental image of God when one prayed. The then Origenist Archbishop Theophilus suggested that one shouldn't. This caused great controversy among the more ordinary and simple of the monastic brethren who used images of God constantly in prayer. It became a tremendous source of controversy. Theophilus switched sides, condemned the Origenists, and the monks who used the writings of Origen found themselves expelled. Cassian seems to have traveled with them, ending up in the city of Constantinople, where they came to know St. John Chrysostom, who ordained Cassian to the diaconate. They were sent from Constantinople to Rome by the adherents, by the friends of St. John Chrysostom, to try to obtain the support of the then Pope, Innocent I. As we know, Chrysostom was condemned and exiled, and we don't know too much about what happened to Cassian after his undertaking this embassy. But after about 10 years, we find himself in the area of Marseille, responsible for monastic foundations himself, and living in association with the monasteries of the Loran. He first seems to have written the Institutes, these 12 books, which describe the prayer practices of the monks of Egypt. He uses Egyptian monasticism as a model towards which he wants his own monks and nuns to aspire, but he's willing to adapt it. He recognizes that you can't live exactly in the same way that these people did. And so one finds his description of monastic practices there in order that they can be applied to the circumstances of the monks in Gaul, in France. He also includes in the Institutes a detailed description of each of the eight deadly thoughts or eight deadly struggles that one has with temptation, and then the conferences, which are largely intended, or so he writes, for hermits, for those who have lived a long time in the cenobium and are being prepared for the experience of solitude. The conferences are his experience of having sat at the feet of great solitaries themselves. They are writings on a whole variety of themes in monastic spirituality, having to do with such things as more information on the deadly thoughts, the whole question of the origin and goal of monastic life, the interpretation of the scriptures, the real contemplative life of monasticism, particularly in the Conference of Abonnestaros, Conference 14, questions on the goal of the hermit and the goal of the cenobite, and other issues such as friendship. They are a gold mine of information, have been read constantly in the monastic tradition of the West. Saint Benedict recommends them for daily reading, and there is a very rich manuscript tradition because they were known and widely read throughout the whole of the medieval period, influencing especially such important theologians as Saint Thomas Aquinas. So the influence and importance of Cassian's writings cannot be too greatly overstated.